afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. We appreciate it after the hell of a night. I know everyone's tired. Tim's a little groggy-eyed. I'm a little sleepy. I'm just kidding. I had a great sleep. But boy, oh boy, what a introduction to the 2025 Stanley Cup Finals. And I, you know what? I have it here on the agenda. I wrote it early. We deserve that. I feel like the playoffs, like I've mentioned before, haven't been too exciting. We've had some duds along the way. The first round was incredible, but that's as fans, as everybody who's listening, you guys are all fans from across the country, from across the world. We have listeners. You deserve that. You deserve that 4-3 overtime game that we just watched. And it wasn't a, you know, a dipping a toe in, Tim, kind of thing where you're getting used to the team you're playing in the Stanley Cup Finals. You're nervous. You don't know what to expect. Maybe you're playing a little passive. That was two heavyweights coming out and throwing bombs and connecting and getting off the canvas and throwing more bombs and going back and forth. That was probably the most entertaining game in the playoffs I've watched to date. It was fantastic. The crowd was electric. Edmonton was ready. McDavid, Tkachuk, everybody showed up. It was a great, great game, and it finished in an appropriate manner with Connor McDavid throwing a nice pass over to Leon for the game winner in overtime on the power play. It was very, very, very enjoyable to watch. I was happy. I was happy watching that game.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, I was up pretty late, didn't want to be, but you can't turn that game off. And it was really fun. And like you said, quite often you see in game one, there's a little bit of a feeling out process. You kind of get a sense of like what the matchup's going to be, what systems they're going to run, like what line combos they're going to have and all that stuff. And then, you know, the series gets more, you know, exciting as it goes on. But this is a rematch of last year. They already know the answers to all those questions. They just got right into it and started playing it like it was game seven and just incredible hockey start to finish. And what a finish from that McDavid to Draisaitl in overtime. Just hard not to think about the Leafs. It's like the superstars show up when it matters most. And we'll get into all that.
Yeah, typically you need to build that animosity. Because in the regular season, it's East-West. You play these guys twice. Once at home, once at the road. That's kind of how the schedule works out. So you don't build that hatred. But you could tell from the drop of a hat that these guys still hate each other. They played in the Four Nations tournament, a lot of them were teammates. So they were not unfamiliar with these guys. And just from the drop of the puck, you could tell it was a different Edmonton Oilers team. You could tell that they had a massive size boulder on their shoulder, and they still had that sour taste from last season in their mouth and the way that they went out. Yes, they came back and they won the three straight games. But that game seven, when they lost the fourth game was just still there. And they played like it. Typically, when these two teams meet, when you think of like the Edmonton Oilers, the persona, how they see the game, it's finesse, it's speed, it's East-West. It's a beautiful brand of hockey. It's very much European. When you think of the Florida Panthers, it's punch you in the face, jam it down your throat. We're going to take it to you, whether you like it or not. And then when you're done, we're going to give it to you some more. The Edmonton Oilers came out and asserted their dominance early. It was just wave after wave. It was very Florida-esque, and it did not end. And you could see that throughout the game. Florida had their little pushback when they went up 3-1. It was Bennett, Marchand, and Bennett in a span of like, what, 5-10 minutes? The end of the first period, beginning of the second. But I would say, Tim, aside from that little stretch, it was the Oilers' game. They were the ones who were the asserting team. They initiated. And Florida, it was very surprising to see them on their heels a little bit. That's not the team that I've seen over the last 3 years.
Well, even that three-goal stretch was kind of I think the Marchand power play goal was a snipe, but like that only came because of the Bennett goal and the challenge and whether or not that should have been a goal. So like it was a weird, fluky thing. And you're right, Edmonton was dominant for most of the game. And what stood out to me among all like the X's and O's and how physical they were, how many times Florida finally got something going just to get like Reinhart gets stood up at the blue line by some defenseman who jumps up and sees his lane and just takes him out. So I don't think I'd seen that version of them really compared to last year.
And it's funny when you think of the Oilers, yes, McDavid, absolutely incredible. Drysdale, absolutely phenomenal. Like those guys showed up, and you mentioned the Leafs. I think you can learn something if you're Austin Matthews, if you're Willie Nylander, and Mitch Marner, who won't be a Leaf for long, but this is how you should play. This is how you win championships. this is what you need to do, because they were the best players on the ice. But aside from that, and we saw they were the best players last year in the playoffs and they didn't win the cup, you need other guys to step up. And a player who was missing last year, who was now here this year, is Evander Kane. And holy hell, did he make his debut in the Stanley Cup Finals. And he put his stamp on this series right away. 9 hits, creating havoc, going after Ekblad, dominating Barkov, doing the things that I feel like the Oilers needed last year, and they didn't have anybody to fill that role. And he came in and he just put his stamp on this series early. The first couple goals, the Draisaitl goal right away was a direct result of him blowing up a D-man, going to the net, creating havoc. And then the Ekholm goal, you have 3 Florida Panthers around Evander Kane in front of the net. And McDavid with the beautiful pass, everybody's talking about that, a great finish by Ekholm. That goal doesn't happen if Evander Kane is not in front of the net, if he's not going after Bobrovsky, if he's not driving the net hard. These are the types of goals that you're going to get with him on the ice, because he just draws so much attention. And you watch next game when they play, he will have a target on his back. He was actively going after Ekblad after the whistle, before the whistle, during the play. He's chirping him. He's in his face. He's trying to get him off his game. It was his goal to create havoc. He is a more effective Sam Bennett in my eyes, because he's quicker, he's faster, he's bigger. He's a great player. And we talked about it last year. Gosh, imagine if he was on the ice, how great he would be in this series. This is what you get. This is what they needed. And I think, not even I think, I know after game one, he will be a huge part of the playoffs if the Edmonton Oilers win. He's so good, especially with Zach Hyman being out. That is a huge deal.
And you think about all the attention he's going to garner in game two. And what's that going to do? Would it open up more space for the other guys, where McDavid or Nuge or the other guys have just a little bit more room to maneuver because of it? And speaking of McDavid, because what I really liked last night is how much he wanted to shoot the puck, how aggressive he was. Because a lot of times you see with these highly skilled players and these highly skilled teams, they want to score off puck possession. They want to make that backdoor pass, the pretty goals. And he was just firing at the net. Just get the rebound. Throw your butt into the goalie. Like, just get that ugly goal. And they didn't get many of those last night, but they were trying for it. And that's going to be big, because Florida's going to make you work for that. It's going to be hard to get a beautiful backdoor setup pass type of play on Bobrovsky in that defense. But I just really liked how aggressive he was and how often he wanted to shoot that puck, even through traffic.
Yeah, and you talk about the star players. You talk about physicality. You have to talk about the other guys that Edmonton has this year that weren't there last year. Jake Walman, coming in from Detroit because the Iser plan sucks. I thought he was going to leave the game 3-4 times because he was so injured. And all of a sudden he shows up and he's just playing heroic hockey. Putt Colson, we mentioned him a few podcasts ago. He has no business doing what he does. This little Russian kid just bouncing around the ice, creating havoc, banging his body, throwing it everywhere. And then the last but not least, Kasperi Kapanen. We mentioned him last podcast too as well. This guy was a healthy scratch at the start of the playoffs. This guy was picked up on waivers from the Edmonton Oilers this season. He was a cast off from the Toronto Maple Leafs. All of a sudden, he's playing on the second line. He's playing great minutes. He's keeping up with Draisaitl. He's playing great hockey. Picks up 2 assists. He's fantastic. Just an amazing kind of slot in when Zach Hyman gets hurt. And it just must be sour for all these other guys. But I heard Steve Dangle say this. The centerman that Kasperi Kapanen has played with in his career is insane. He's played with Sidney Crosby, he's played with Draisaitl, he's played with McDavid, and he's played with one other incredible centerman in his career. He's been so lucky to bounce around the league and play with the type of players he's playing. And I think he's finally found his groove this year, where he's just playing more physical. He's playing with a little bit more of an edge. He has 38 hits now in 7 games. He's averaging almost 5 hits a game, and he's putting up points, and he's playing great hockey, and he's getting rewarded with it by playing with Draisaitl, playing 20, 25 minutes a game. So it's fantastic what Edmonton did in game one. They were physical. They were assertive. They were just doing things that we aren't used to them doing. Now, on the other side of the ice, they were struggling a little bit. And not struggling in a sense of losing and getting dominated, but they weren't playing Florida Panthers hockey. The only guy that I really feel like showed up, because they played great. Let's not just downplay how great Florida was, but Sam Bennett doing what Sam Bennett does, just getting in the grill of the goaltender, getting under the team's skin, scoring goals. He now leads the NHL in goals in the playoffs. What do you have, 10 now? 9 or 10?
12. He's got 12.
12 now. He had 10 coming in. Scores 2 more last night. First one, very controversial. Let's start on that. You saw the goal. Tied the game up 1-1. It was a shot, goes off his skate, up over Stuart Skinner's shoulder, But he's in Stuart Skinner's lap. He's battling with the D-man, Jake Wallman, gets tripped by Brent Kulak, falls very conveniently into Stuart Skinner, 1-1. Big moment in the game because obviously Edmonton challenges. What did you think of this goal? Good goal, bad goal?
Yeah, you know what? I was watching with Julia last night. I was kind of explaining to her of like, okay, the rules of goalie interference, but I was like, no one understands it. Like, no one gets it. Like, we're always confused by the call, and it's just like this running joke in the hockey world that the league always has weird rules on this. And so, but I was like, but this one, he's clearly knocked into it. He doesn't get tripped. I mean, he trips over Kulak, but it's not like a tripping motion. It's Sam Bennett, the one initiating contact. This one's going to come back. And of course it doesn't. So like, I still don't know. I thought this should have been called back. I was bummed that it wasn't, even though I was rooting for Panthers. I just felt like it shouldn't have been a good goal.
Yeah, it's so tricky because you have to throw out the player. Like, you have to, if you're just analyzing that one goal, you can't look at the name on the back. You have to just go player A, goalie A, shot, whatever. If you break it down, Kulak does trip him. You know, like he does catch his skate and Sam Bennett falls. He could have fell a different way, but the cause of him going down is Kulak. Now, in the grand scheme of things, and you remember who the player is, that does play a part in it too, because everybody's human. It should have been a no goal. I'll agree. It should have been waved off. It should have just been, okay, face off outside the zone, play on. But obviously, like you said, the NHL is just oblivious and they call things that are completely random. It's like they have a coin back there and they flip every single call is just randomly. There's no rhyme or reason or anything consistent in the player safety or the review process at all. So the goal counts, and because they challenge, Florida gets a power play. And lo and behold, Brad Marchand shows up and scores a great power play goal, and the Florida Panthers go up 2-1. And this is the point in the game where you go, okay, Stuart Skinner's going to implode. Like, that's it. The Oilers, they got a bad break. They get scored on the power play. We go into the intermission. This is where things go south. And then the second period starts, and Florida's playing great, and they score again. Sam Bennett on a breakaway. Great pass from Matthew Tkachuk. Great out-of-the-zone play by Nate Schmidt. It's like, okay, this is it. This is the moment where Edmonton just implodes. Florida, they don't lose, Tim, when they have the lead. They're 30, some stupid stat, like 31-0 when they're leading after 18-0, and they're like all these crazy stats under Paul Maurice. They play great when they have the lead. But they didn't implode, Tim. They did not fold. Stuart Skinner did not turn into Stuart Skinner of years past when he just like goes into a shell. He was aggressive. He was out of the blue. The Edmonton Oilers pushed. As soon as they scored that third goal, it was like the Edmonton Oilers flipped that switch. And we talked about it. We've talked about this before. There's very few teams who can flip that switch, and the Oilers did. And it was led by their stars. McDavid, he was on fire. Drysdale, he was just electric. And then that was it. Bob lets up a shaky goal, in my opinion, from Arvidsson. And a great play by Pod Colson, driving the D-man back. He's got a lane. He takes a slap shot. 3-2 hockey game, and then you can go, oh, boy. I can see them coming back. And then why doubt the Edmonton Oilers? This is what they do. This is what they do in this playoffs. They go down, they muster up some courage, and then they come back. They're the best team coming from behind that I've seen ever. They thrive in it. They enjoy being the underdog. I don't know. Am I wrong, Tim?
Well, no. What a swing it was from last year, because this is exactly the kind of situation where like, okay, 2-1 after that huge momentum swing. This game's over. Let's get ready for game two. Obviously, that's a little bit of an over exaggeration, but that kind of what it felt like last year. And then all of a sudden, like you said, it's a different team. They outshot the Panthers 14-2 in the third period while they were losing. Like, that's a different team because that's a mental thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's we're not giving up. That's puck battles. That's quick decisions. And that's being aggressive while your goalie's making the big saves, because you need to play with them taking more risk because you need a couple of goals, and Stuart Skinner just tremendous. A couple of those, like the rebound and just the shoulder blocks and stuff through traffic, just really, really good. And if he continues that, you know, that's one of the biggest questions, if not the biggest question going into the series, is which Stuart Skinner are we going to see? Last night he showed us he's going to be good. So if this continues, it's going to be a long series.
Now, game one's done. And we'll talk about more stuff here because there's a lot to break into. But I want to ask, is this a bigger deal for Edmonton coming back and winning 4-3 or Florida losing the lead and losing in overtime? typically when they just close it out and they coast to a game one win. I can't figure out which team. Obviously Edmonton wins the game, but is there one team that's like, yeah, we got them, or a team that's like, you know, like we're in for one, or are we still on par?
I see what you're saying. I think this is the higher high for Edmonton than it is a lower low for Florida. I think Florida's not, they're a very unflappable team as well. I don't think they get particularly worried. And even, you know, we'll go into the overtime. It was kind of a fluke penalty. You know what I mean? Like if he doesn't make that notice and make that bonehead play, and all of a sudden you don't get that power play, it's a different game. Maybe they come away with a win. So I feel like they think they were right there. And if you're also at Florida, you saw the best that Edmonton had to offer. And it took a weird overtime bounce in overtime for them to win that game. You know what I mean? Like, so I think if Florida says we can get back on our game and throw them off theirs, we might win this game by 2 or 3 goals. And so that's, if you're trying to spin it positively for Florida, that's how I'd do it.
Yeah. I do think if I'm Florida, I need to adjust how I play though. I don't think you can continue playing that brand of hockey and even expect to make it to overtime. I think they were chasing the game for most of the game. Like they were just getting dominated, which is very un-Florida-like. And one thing that I know, they kept icing the puck. I didn't have a number on it, but it was in the dozens where I was like, holy crap. Like even the penalty, he was trying to ice it, Thomas Novak. He was just trying to get rid of it. And it just goes out of the rink. And then like, we obviously know what happened, but that's not their typical brand of hockey. And I feel like when they got up 3-1, especially, they just pulled right back. They had 4 guys lined up across the blue line. They said, Edmonton, if you want to beat us, you're going to have to chip it in and you're going to have to do it a different way than you typically do it. I mean, you look at the shots chart. Florida only had 32 shots in 4 periods. 32, which is like nothing. Nothing. This, coming from a team who typically averages 32 in a game, they had an extra period and only got 32 shots. The big thing that stood out to me is, Tim, only 7 of those shots were from inside the house. And you know the house, the lines where you drop from the hash marks, bottom of the circle to the crease. 7 were inside the house. Of those 7 shots, 3 were goals. So they're still scoring in the dangerous areas, but they weren't throwing pucks there. Typically, out of their 32, 40 shots, they usually get a game. I would say a good quarter of them, if not more, from that house area. The rebounds, the tips, this and then that. On the other side of the ice, Edmonton Oilers, they had 45 shots. 16 of them were from inside the house. 16, which is fantastic. There's rebounds, there's tips, there's battling. It's wearing on the other team's defensemen. It's hard to play against when the team constantly throws pucks at the net, battling for rebounds. And if Florida has any chance to come back, and they obviously have a chance, they have to revert back to the initiating team. They have to get on their toes. They have to force Evan Bouchard back. Evan Bouchard is a terrific, terrific hockey player. He's great offensively. Defensively, I don't think he's that good defensively. We saw it in the regular season. He's not great. Darnell Nurse, he's prone to maybe giving the puck away every once in a while. You have to force these guys to turn around and go back and get the puck, and then you have to bury him. How many times did Ekblad get pasted into glass? Mikula. How many times did that happen where Edmonton just got them turning, got them running back, and they were on them? Whether it was Kapanen or Kane or anybody, Tim, it was the whole team. So they need to change the way they play. And I think Paul Maurice will address that. And obviously being on the road hurts. You don't get the matchups you like. You're always playing chess. You're trying to get the right lineups out there. And you maybe that changes because you're in the neutral zone and you're trying to get someone to go to McDavid. You're trying to get Barkov out against somebody. So that changes the forecheck a little bit. But it was not good. So I think to answer my question, I feel like Florida might be feeling pretty good because that was not their game and they still almost snuck out with a win. So going into game 2, I know what they're saying. We played garbage. We need to be better. And if we're better, we will beat this team, which is a good thing to have in your back pocket. It sucks when you play really good and you still lose. So I think Florida maybe might feeling okay, even though they lost in overtime and it was a power play goal, which kind of feels a little better too. Not if you're pouring off Thomas Novak. But I don't know. That's kind of my reasoning here. But Thomas Novak, what did Paul Maurice say after the game? Because he was directly asked, what did you say to Thomas Novak after the game?
Thomas Nosek.
Huh? Nosek, sorry. Why am I saying Novak? Is that a tennis player?
Tommy Novak's on the Predators. No. That's that other player.
Oh, sorry. Nosek. Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah. He just said, you know, told him not to worry. And this is like what a coach does. You know, just don't put it on one player. Because again, this could have gone a million different ways and the Panthers had their chances. But They were down 2-0 against the Leafs, and we know how that one went. So if you think about the, you know, you mentioned Sam Bennett being the guy that delivered the most for the Panthers in game one. I think Bobrovsky had a good game overall. I think you'd want one more save. I think that's like the Podkolzin one. I don't know, the Arvidsson one, I mean. Who do you think needs to be better in game two? Like, who are you looking at saying, if we're going to get back in our game, these guys need to step up?
Do you hear the shaking right now in my office?
No.
I got construction outside. They're literally 20 feet from my window. A big steamroller's coming by. My whole office shakes. It's crazy. To be better, I think the Edmonton Oilers, their third line, I feel like, was just not invisible. And it's tough to really critique players. But when you look at Edmonton and how they played, their third line was their Corsi. They were underwater. They gave up a ton more shots than what they generated. They were just basically invisible. They were -5 or -4, I want to say, between the three of them. So we all knew Florida had a strong third line. That was obvious. And it was on display last night. Marchand played great. Luceron and Lindell played really good. Frederick, Henrique, and Connor Brown, we need more.
I didn't notice them at all last night.
Yeah, we need absolutely more. Connor Brown was -2. Trent Frederick, they didn't play much, and you could tell Chris Knobloch knew that they weren't playing well, and he gassed them. Like, they didn't get much ice at all. The fourth line for Florida didn't play much, and the third line for Edmonton did not play much at all. So we need them to do more, because how much can you just always rely on the top guys? And maybe in Edmonton you can, because they have that kind of personality. I know. Is there anybody in Edmonton, Tim, you think he needs to step up?
Not really. I mean, they played great.
What about Florida?
Florida, there's a couple of guys that stood out to me. I don't think Gustav Forsling had a very good game. They talked about him on the broadcast a bit with that first goal for not getting the back door. It's a tough bounce. What can you do? But I don't think his pairing with Mikkola was very good last night. I think Ekblad got exposed a couple of times. He was -2. Forsling was also -2. And I'm looking at their, depending on how you look at it, but first or second line with Barkov, Reinhardt, and Evan Rodriguez, were held pointless, pretty much. Evan Rodriguez got a secondary assist on the power play goal, but that line on 5-on-5 was off the board. So you want to see them deliver, and I think they will. Obviously a very good line, but those are some guys I think can step up in game two.
Yeah, I think the matchups are going to play a huge part in this. We saw in Florida-Toronto last series, Matthews, Marner were flying the first three games. Toronto was playing lights out. As soon as Maurice switched up the lines in the matchups and he put Marchand, Lustrein, and Lindell on that top line, it completely changed the outcome of the series. It was just that big of a deal. And I feel like Paul Maurice, if he has an opportunity, will try to match up those three guys versus one of those two top lines. Because right now, Knobloch did a good job in game one of just getting those guys some action. You look at the offensive zone faceoffs. Obviously, McDavid's going to get out there. But when you look at Corey Perry, Tim, he had one defensive zone faceoff. One. Wow. And that was probably because it was an icing. He had 13 offensive zone faceoffs. So out of all the faceoffs he was on the ice, 93% of them were in the offensive zone. So Chris Knobloch obviously knows who his offensive guys are, but it's just funny. He protects players. He puts them in positions to succeed. So I want to see how that goes forward when they do go to Florida, if Edmonton will take advantage of a Corey Perry, because he's 40. He's not fast. Try to get him in tough positions, get him facing some high-end guys where he's forced to defend, because that's what you want. You want guys who are not used to defending, guys who are maybe a little overwhelmed going up against your top guy. So I think Chris Knobloch definitely won the coach's battle in game one. And it'll be tough for Paul Maurice to do anything in game two. You will have to. And what my coaches did in years past was you would mix up the lines. So you'd put out two guys from one guy line and another guy, and then based on who they counter with, you do a quick change. And yes, it's not ideal, but that's what you can do to kind of counteract a coach who's really dominating the changing game. So you maybe put Marchand out with a couple wingers, then you change whoever you want based on the other line that you're facing. But it was a good first matchup for the Edmonton Oilers. Connor McDavid played over 31 minutes. He almost led the team in ice. Will that be an issue moving forward? Because typically forwards play, what, 18 to 22? When you look at the ice time for the Florida Panthers, even though they played overtime, I think the highest ice time was 23, and that was Sam Reinhardt. Matthew Tkachuk only played 21, which makes me think something's going on there. But when you look at the Edmonton Oilers, holy hell, does Connor McDavid play a lot of ice? 31-12 he played. The next highest forward was Draisaitl at 28. And then after that, the next highest forward was 23. So he almost played a full 10 minutes more than the next highest forward. Do you think if this series goes the distance, is there any issue there? Or is it just like he's a freak of nature? He's fine.
No, he is a freak. I think if game two went to like, you know, overtime, double overtime, and he's pushing 30 plus again, then okay, maybe there's a factor in game three or some rest or whatever. But we talked about this in the preview episode. He wants this so bad. He is fully ready mentally and physically. He'll do anything. And you saw that from like every shift last night. So no worries there. And I think you can expect him, especially as the series goes on, to maybe not get 30 plus minutes, but he's going to get more ice time and more important ice time in those big moments.
Yeah. And he doesn't really take much damage. He doesn't get hit. If he does, it's just rubbed out against a wall. It's almost a case of Florida respects him too much, you know, because he gets the puck and I feel like they just automatically, they give him the outside. They do not want him to get to the middle of the ice. And so they try to funnel him around the net. They try to funnel him behind the net. And the first goal was a prime case of that, where they let him have the zone. He gets it. And he has all this time because they desperately don't want him cutting to the middle of the ice. And he's able to find Ekholm back door on a beautiful, beautiful pass. But it's like, maybe they need to start challenging him a little more, you know, taking a couple runs at him.
Yeah, the overtime goal was the same thing, because he was on his horse and think, okay, here we go. But they clogged up the middle and forced him outside and forced him to pull up and look back to Nuge. And then, you know, unfortunately for the Panthers, four beautiful passes later, Draisaitl finds the back of the net. But yeah, that's a good point about how they're kind of, how do you adjust to that? And the thing is, not to make it about the Leafs, but like a Matthews, like incredibly elite, incredibly strong, incredibly good shot, but he's a big moving target and speed is not part of his game. And so, like, you get those more hits on him compared to a guy like McDavid, who's just too slippery.
Yeah, I know some people might not want to hear this, but I think to counteract that, you have a conversation with your forwards and you try to, you stamp it out in the neutral zone. And you just say, if you take a penalty, you take a penalty. Like, we have to get McDavid thinking that he's going to have contact in the neutral zone. And so you have to either tell, and I don't know who can keep up with him, but you have to just get that message out there and say, take a run at him. We can't keep letting him skate through the neutral zone with the mentality of he's not going to get touched. And in game one, you could tell he got more and more confident the more he got the puck. But if as a player, and this is true for Connor McDavid as well, if you can touch him early, if you can get that in the back of his head, like, okay, they're changing the way they play the game. I have to get the puck and I have to maybe pause because I might get blasted. Then that changes the way he skates through the neutral zone. Instead of just getting on the afterburners right away, he pauses a little bit. Why do you think they do the big roundup now? Players want to gain speed. If I'm McDavid and I know someone's going to come after me as soon as I cross that blue line, maybe I hesitate a little bit. Maybe I don't just go 23 miles an hour right away. So I think Florida needs to make that and just say, we're going to go all out for a big hit. And if he gets past us, so be it. We still have 3-4 guys back, but we have to slow him down. So if I'm Maurice, I'm going through my lineup. I'm going, okay, each line, which guy can take a run at him? And just go for it. Tkachuk, go for it. Just take a run. If you take a tripping, who cares? Try to bury him through the boards. Because you have to slow him up. You can't just keep letting him just going main to Maui every time he gets the puck and just a million miles an hour. It doesn't work. He's going to just carve you up.
Yeah, I wonder if that's an assignment for that third line. You put no one can keep up with him one for one, but Lewis Duranin is a great skater and forechecker, and maybe he's the guy in Marchand and Lindell just get in his grill, and you're never going to stop him. You're not going to stop him most times, but
yeah,
if one time out of 10 it turns into a penalty or even just an offensive chance going the other way, you know, it's worth it. And so those are series changing plays.
Even the defenseman be like, Kulikov, go for it, man. Just try to bury him. Ekblad, let's go. Like try to slow Mikola. You have big bodies on the back end. Just sell out, leave your guy. We will give up a breakaway. We need to touch this guy. We have to start making him second guess what he's doing, because boy, it's amazing when he gets the puck. It's not fair what he's doing. But I don't know, Tim. Game two is tomorrow. Predictions, because typically, you know, you get that momentum. You want to win game two. Do you think Florida ties it up? Do you think Edmonton can? I know you're not an oracle, but where do you see this game going? Because it kind of played out where Edmonton was strong, Florida was strong in the second, then Edmonton took over the next two periods. Do you see Florida bouncing back? Obviously, you would have to.
I think they will, but I guess I wouldn't be shocked if it's 2-0 Edmonton after this. And this is the whole, like, has the series started yet? Well, no, it hasn't, because the home team won 2-1. It's a little different in the finals, but I think this is a series where the home team matchups and the line matchups and the last change and all that stuff is really going to matter. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see 2-2 home split, and then we have a best of three after that.
Yeah. I'm hesitant to say if Edmonton goes up 2-0, it's over, but I can't see a team beating Edmonton 4 or 5.
Yeah.
You know, right. I can't see it. So if I'm Florida, like it's almost a must win game, because the idea of that happening, losing 4 or 5 for the Edmonton Oilers, it doesn't make sense to me. So Florida, this is a must win.
The only thing I would add to that, though, the Panthers won 3 straight last year, and then Edmonton won 3 straight. So these teams are very hard to predict, and that's what makes this so fun. It's just they're so evenly matched, yet so different. It's just you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, and that's why I do feel like this series is a little bit different. I don't think we're going to see a blowout. Last year, it was blowout, 3 blowouts for Florida, 3 blowouts for Edmonton, and then we finally had a decent Game 7. It was not enjoyable hockey. As a whole, it was enjoyable because the dynamic of losing 3, winning 3, and then having Game 7. But individual game-wise, it was kind of boring. It was kind of just like it was over after the second period. So, first period, in some cases. I think Edmonton won Game 4 8-1, then they were up 4-1, then they were up 5-1, and Florida clawed back, and the same went for Florida the first 3 games. I don't see them able to come back from a 2-0 deficit, but that's just me. I hope Florida wins, and I hope this goes to 7, but McDavid looks like a man on a mission. He really does. Did you see after the goal when they scored? He didn't even celebrate when Ekholm got the game tire. It was just like, yeah, let's go. We're not done. Let's go. It was just, it's just like, that's scary for the opposing teams. Like, he's not even smiling. Like, bro, like, not even smiling a little bit. You're at home. You score. You just made a beautiful pass to tie the game up. Oof, not even smiling. So I don't. Game 2 then is tomorrow. Very exciting. They did a couple games off for a couple days off before Game 3. The hell of a first parlay, Tim. I don't. Do you want to get into other stuff, or do you want to call it quits?
I'll just do a couple quick ones here. We'll save most of the offseason rumors, but Brock Nelson signed an extension with the Colorado Avalanche, 3 years at 7.5. It's a bit high for me. I guess
7.5 per.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. I guess the cap is going up, but still.
Cap is going up, and they expect him to lock in their second line center, but that's a good chunk of change there.
Yeah.
Especially when they're playing Charlie Coyle, like, what, 5.25 or something? The Bruins announced this morning that Marco Stern is officially their next head coach. We talked always about Bruins. That last week. Speaking of Bruins, former Bruins and the Panthers. So we talked a lot about Brad Marchand. And Chris Johnston from TSN said that his prediction, or his inkling, what he's hearing, is that a lot of teams are interested, not surprising. Some are willing to offer him $8 million a year. That's surprising to me. And there's a little bit of recency bias there, because you think, okay, great series, you know, great playoff run. But it's crazy for a guy that we thought his career was on basically over to now potentially looking at 7+$8 million contracts. Pretty cool.
But is that the team's willing to offer $8 million, or is that Marchand seeking $8 million? I think that's very big difference there, because if I'm Marchand, if I want to win, I'm not taking $8 million.
Yeah.
You know? And how much has he made in his career? He's 37, turning 38. He's had contracts upwards of, you know, $40, $50 million over the life. He had $50 million contract of Boston. He had an $18 million contract, a $5 million contract, and a $2.5 million. Like, he's made his money. He's made almost $75 million. And, you know, I think at that point, you have to just think about quality of life and just go, yeah, I'm going to sign a $4 million deal, a $3 million deal, and win a Stanley Cup or compete. I'm not going to go sign in Utah and make a ton of money and then lose in the first round. Mitch Marner.
Yeah. Well, Speaking of Utah, there's, you try to follow the Marner rumors, and you go to ESPN, you go to TSN, you go to Sportsnet, all these guys, and everyone is listing different teams. One list is the Hawks, the Sens, the Ducks, and the Blue Jackets. There's another one with the Flames and Yeti, Knights, Carolina. Like,
who are the Yeti? One.
It's half the team. Huh?
Utah. Who's the Yeti? Mammoth. We're gonna get sued now because of the Yeti. You can't do that.
I sure can. And then the last thing I want to mention is the Stars. A couple of updates here, but the Stars are A, reportedly open to moving, if not actively shopping, Jason Robertson, which is just a cap reality, which I think is kind of bonkers, but that's where we are. And then a lot of the players aren't happy with Peter DeBoer, which isn't really surprising. Not just that he pulled Ottinger, but some of the comments he made after the game is he might have lost the room a little bit.
Well, you saw it in the NBA. Tom Thibodeau got fired after bringing the Knicks to the Final Four. He got gassed because apparently it wasn't working out. Now Pete DeBoer might be the next victim of that, and I would not surprise me. It's a very player-friendly league. The owners and the GM, they want to make the players happy, and if the coach says something or does something that they don't like, the coach goes. Like it's not the old days where the players just have to take it and like it. So I'm guessing in the year-end meetings, they went into Jim Neal's office and they go, we don't like how he talks to us. We didn't like that he benched Ottinger. We don't like that. Get him out of here. So you have to listen to the players. And if Mikko Rantanen and Hintz and Wyatt Johnson and Robertson and everybody are speaking the same message, you know, you have to make a change. You don't want that friction in the locker room, especially for a team that's competing for a cup. You don't want that in training camp. You got to address it now. But what a mistake it would be, I think, if they got rid of Pete DeBoer. I really, really do. It would be a great thing if they traded Jason Robertson. I think he peaked. I think he had a very much like a Svechnikov year where Svech went out and scored 40 goals. I think that was Robertson the last couple of years where he got 46 and 41. And it was just, he hit that sweet spot. The line was working on all cylinders. Maybe they weren't first line, but everything just worked. And he's not, I don't know, but he's still, he put up 35 last year. So he's not like he's a shitty, a crappy player. So I don't know. We'll see where he goes. But when you're looking at this team, like you're not moving Rantanen. No one's taking Sagan's contract. Rupe Hintz, I think, is better. Wyatt Johnson, you're definitely not moving him. What piece makes sense to move? And unfortunately, it's Jason Robertson.
Especially if you can get a solid return for him. So it's Who knows what they will. Depends on where he goes. If he's an RFA after next year, they're going to be wanting that term. But yeah, we'll see.
It's crazy how just losing, not just losing a series, but lose to the Oilers and you totally got to blow up the team. It's just amazing how fast it happens. This team that was a week ago, like, they're going to win the Stanley Cup. And now fast forward to now, it's like, blow her up, baby. Like this team, it's not going to work. Let's go change it up. It's funny how hockey works. But anyways, everybody, that's it for us. We appreciate you listening. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy the hockey. Hopefully the game tomorrow is just as enjoyable. And we'll be back with you next week to talk over it. Cheers, everybody.